Hi, this is John Cryer, and I am hosting a new 7-part true crime podcast called Lawyers, Guns, and Money that'll challenge everything you think you know about U.S. covert operations and presidential misconduct. From Jack Bryan, the director of American PSYOP, comes the incredible true story of John Mattis, a newly sworn-in Miami public defender in the 1980s who has found himself completely in over his head.
I step off the plane, and there is a van with a couple guys with Uzis. And one of them in broken English said, "Welcome to Bogota, John."
Mattis's first felony defendant has been arrested for having a machine gun and tells Mattis a dangerous secret.
He was shipping arms into Central America on behalf of the CIA. As a first-time lawyer, I want to act like I know what I'm doing.
But with the help of a Colombian drug smuggler...
How much money the CIA raised by hitting up drug dealers?
A lot of money, millions of dollars.
An Alabama mercenary...
They were prepared to die to the last man. I saw this in them. I saw the fire in their eyes. And they made me their war chief.
And a newly elected senator, John Kerry...
We are looking at allegations of drug running, gun smuggling, conspiracy to commit murder and murder itself.
He'll fight to free his client.
The judge said, "Show me in a courtroom how we were at war."
Expose an illegal war being run by the White House.
I mean, I wanted him involved, but I didn't want to be on record as doing it.
And somehow stay alive in the process.
I just escaped a kidnapping by the CIA in Costa Rica.
This is Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
So you have a man in an Armani suit standing on the bow of a boat with a rocket launcher and says, "If I lose sight of you, I will launch. You will be vaporized."
Available everywhere starting October 29th, or get it ad-free and early starting October 22nd at lawyersgunsandmoney.supercast.com. There you'll find bonus episodes along with exclusive content. Subscribe now.
MSW Media.
News with swearing. Daily Beans.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Beans for Friday, December 6, 2019. Today, Trump files for appeal with the Supreme Court in the Mazars oversight case, the impeachment strategy. Matthew fucking Whitaker is back in the news. Dem senators request an ethics investigation into Barr. Trump ends food stamps for Christmas. Another unqualified conservative judge is confirmed. I'm your host, AG. And with me today are Jordan Coburn.
Hello.
And Amanda Reeder.
Hello.
How are you?
Good.
Yeah, pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Your dog slipped and fell?
He did. He's okay. He's okay.
Everyone, he's okay.
Yeah, he's okay.
Do they have life alert for dogs?
Poor Moo. Okay,
he's not here.
Yeah, my wife's gonna be mad because like it was not funny. Animals being injured is not funny. However,
he was not injured.
It was kind of funny.
was he actually injured?
I don't know. He was not injured at all. Okay. He just came in from the rain and he was doing his like zoomies, you know, as sometimes dogs do when they come back from their walks. And he was like running around the house, like losing his shit. And then we have tile flooring and it's kind of wet from him shaking his water all over the place. And he just like ran into the coffee table, just like full speed.
I used the term zoomies. My D&D podcast the other day. Zoomies is like this inside term that we use.
Yeah.
Joel and Amanda and I, she had a pet rabbit named Lulu. And every once in a while, just, you know, cats do this middle of the night. They just run around and do laps and run all over and jump on the couch. She calls it the zoomies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a guy we do D&D with on our Awful Neutral podcast, and he can't sit still. And I'm like, "Oh, you got the zoomies today?"
That's funny.
He was Clint, and he's like, "What?" And everybody's laughing, like, "The zoomies."
I get the zoomies.
You do. You do get the zoomies.
I do. It makes AG nervous. She's like, "What are you puttering around for?" I'm like, "I just got to stand up and move." She can't sit still.
Yeah. And then there's the snack hover, too. Yeah, it happens a lot. I get nervous when people are up, standing up when I'm sitting down near me. I'm like,
I do that a lot. Sorry.
No, it's cool.
I prefer to stand.
That's my new pod dog / pod animal request. I want videos of your animals doing zoomies.
Aww. Oh, dude.
Running
if
around.
You have zoomies or zoomie gifs.
Yeah. But not running into a coffee table.
Yeah. No hurting. No. That happened to my mom's cat once. He came full throttle and hit the sliding glass door. Thought it was open. And then slid down the glass door.
Oh, God.
And at the time, the cat's name was Spider-Man. And that day...
The
cat's name changed to Gary Larson because it just reminded me of something out of a Gary Larson cartoon. And I laughed. I did.
That's funny.
The cat was okay.
Nice. Zoomies is what I'm going to start calling my eye floaters, I think.
Oh, I like
that.
Yeah,
that's a good word for those. I got zoomies. It fits a lot of things.
It does.
Any darting action, really.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Zoomies. All right.
Now you know.
Now that we've gone through that, we do have news. So let's hit the hot notes. Hot notes. So just some quick late breaking news. Just found out Mitch McConnell has told the White House there's no way to avoid an impeachment trial. And Chuck Grassley has warned Trump not to testify in the impeachment trial.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Like he was gonna, but...
Right. I know we were talking about maybe there was a slight chance he would do it if it's in the Senate where his buddies are, but...
Yeah. Grassley's like, don't even do it.
That's funny. Well, he'll have no problem abiding by that advice, I'm sure.
I kind of hope that because Chuck Grassley is telling him not to do it, it'll like embolden him, it'll make him want to, you know, like how you just want to do things just because someone told you can't.
Reverse psychology.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, his lawyers told him a million times not to testify for Mueller and he didn't. So, but we'll see what happens. So today, Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, held a press conference in which she announced the House is moving forward with articles of impeachment. So let's talk strategy here. A few opinions out there. First, Congressman Rooney, a GOP Florida guy, said today he would, you know, he was thinking about voting for impeachment, but only if the Democrats get more evidence. There's not enough evidence for him to vote for it. And the Republicans in the House Judiciary impeachment hearing yesterday said impeachment is okay, just not this fast. You're going too fast. Slow down. You move too fast. And we know, and on the opposite side of that, we know McConnell wants it to be fast. He wants a fast trial. He wants it in January. And then today, Trump tweeted, if you're going to impeach me, do it fast. Do it now.
Ugh.
And we know the judiciary is already drawing up articles of impeachment, but nothing Pelosi said today indicated that they're you know, they'll be voted on anytime soon. She didn't say that, you know, other than, you know, we're moving forward. We have to get this done fast. Schiff has said there's a sense of urgency. Rep. Veronica Escobar said today that we are a month away from 2020 and Ukraine is urgent because it involves the 2020 election. But I don't understand how voting on impeachment now helps protect us in 2020. I don't see that. I mean, I get that it's urgent, but like, what do you get out of it? So, so where do I stand on this? I'm still, okay. I think we need to hang back a second. First of all, I think if Pelosi intended to vote on articles by Christmas, she would have said as much today, although I could be wrong. Considering McConnell wants a fast impeachment, I think the GOP strategy in the hearing to complain about rushing it was purposeful to divide Democrats. And I think McConnell spoke to Trump and told him, you don't want to wait until they have your tax returns. So I think that's what prompted Trump to tweet, you know, impeach me now. I would like to wait until we have the strongest possible case, personally, for me. Not on Ukraine. I think we have a perfectly strong case on Ukraine. I'm talking about tax crap and Mueller stuff. So remember Trump appointed his tax guy before he appointed Barr? He shoved him through the confirmation process. It was more important to him than Barr, signaling he was way more worried about what was in his tax returns than what he was about the Mueller findings, especially since we knew Rosenstein prevented Mueller from investigating Trump's finances. And in all the court cases, Dems have argued that finances and the Mueller grand jury materials are being considered in the impeachment inquiry. And the House counsel said Pelosi knows and supports that during those arguments. And I think if you're mad about, you know, not impeaching before Christmas, I think it's because Trump maybe wants you to be. But I think that's their goal with the hearing yesterday. All the cases have been fast-tracked by at least 3 months, and we're going to get those findings sooner rather than later. The GOP will certainly argue that we can't impeach during an election year, but fuck you, yes, we can. Don't forget they tried that tactic with Merrick Garland and succeeded. And if we impeach now, and by impeach I mean draft articles, vote in the judiciary, then vote in the full House. If we do that now, 100% Trump won't be removed by the Senate. No chance at all. If we wait like 12 weeks and we get the tax crap and Mueller stuff, the chances increase. It's probably still very low chances, but they increase. In either case, while I've disagreed with Pelosi in the past, she's earned my trust, and whatever she decides will likely be the right way to go. But what I'm saying is I don't think Pelosi will hand this over to the Senate for a January trial. That's what my beans are on. I have no indication because mainstream media and everything else is telling us the opposite. So that's actually a really weird out-on-a-limb stance for me to have, but I have it. I think they'll vote on the articles in the judiciary on Ukraine and then wait until they get the reports from the other committees, including the Judiciary Committee, which is still investigating the Mueller obstruction, and then add those articles before they send it to the full House for the vote. And that's where my beans are. And if I'm wrong about that and they push these through and hand it off to the Senate by January, I'll have to trust Pelosi has some sort of trick up her sleeve or did it for a reason.
Has she said anything that makes it sound like she wouldn't wait for those reports from the other committees?
Everything she said indicates she's waiting.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Except for, you know, this is urgent. We have to get this done fast. But she, you know, she everything else indicates that she's waiting for the, I call it the tax crap and the Mueller stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tax crap and Mueller stuff.
Which can
tax crap though?
Yeah, refresh my memory. What's the timeline on the tax crap?
We were talking like April, right?
Yeah.
What it's looking like is that these cases will be heard by the Supreme Court for to determine whether they'll grant the cert. Mm-hmm. Maybe in conference on December 13th. Mm-hmm. We'll know by December 16th. If not, the January 10th conference. And the Supreme Court can also decide, you know what, we need another week. We're not going to rely on these two conferences. We're going to have a conference on December 17th or December 20th. And then we would learn on the 23rd. Because usually they have a Friday conference and then they tell you what they're taking up and what they're not on, on the following Monday. And what that means is they could hear argument. They could first deny the certs. I don't think that they will. I think they'll hear these cases. But you know, we'll see. That puts the timeline in January. We could hear the arguments in February and they could decide by March. At the outside, the announcements of what they've heard in that first term are in June, the June-July timeframe. Mm-hmm. So that's the latest.
Yeah.
So people who are like, this is going to push it past the election, it's absolutely impossible.
Right. Well, I suppose at least by mid-January, we'll have a much, much, much better idea of how it's going to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in fact, by December 13th, mm-hmm. we might know.
Then.
Because if you know,
they don't hear it.
What could happen is they could, you know, they could say the Supreme Court's like, we're going to hear all these. We're going to hear them in January. Here's the schedule.
Yeah.
And Pelosi will go, ah, fuck it. We're not waiting. Or, I mean, you know, we'll wait. It's coming in January. Or, you know, they might say, we're going to hear these in March. They, you know, depending on what they come out with December 13th or January 10th.
Yeah.
I say at least wait until January 10th on the outside of, you know, for to hear these, to see what the Supreme Court decides, if they're going to hear these cases at all.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. You know, it obviously it's urgent, but if this could be massively helped by just a number of weeks, just being a tiny bit more patient, I think that...
Well, the other thing you have to consider is, do we want him removed in the Senate?
He won't be removed in the Senate. There's no way he's being removed in the Senate.
Okay. Well, let's say we wait for this extra evidence and mm-hmm. it proves that he lied to Mueller under oath. And it proves, you know, when he said he didn't have foreknowledge of WikiLeaks. And it proves that he had loans co-signed by Russia and that he's a complete tax fraudster. And let's say for some miracle that actually
changes the Senate's mind.
Do we even want him removed from office at this point? Because isn't he the easiest to defeat in November? Whatever Republican is running is going to cheat.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like Trump has it. You know, I'm the only one that cheats.
Right.
So it's, you know, we have to think about that, too. And that might be a political consideration that the Democrats are making. Do we even want him removed? If that's the case, if they want him impeached hardcore and don't want him removed, then they can do the John Dean recommendation, which mm-hmm. is let's wait until January, February, get everything, impeach him in March, and then don't send it to the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck them.
Well, mm-hmm. apparently the Senate wants it to be taken up, you know. That's because they essentially want to put the trial on trial and do a scorched earth defense.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. It gives them a chance to call Biden and Hunter Biden
and
all these other witnesses that otherwise wouldn't have gotten a chance to get called. They want to call Adam Schiff. They want to call Nancy Pelosi. So,
but if these fraud things come out, it could have even if the Senate doesn't vote to impeach him, we could have tipped the scale of public opinion by then with all the new information that comes out.
My best case, my dream scenario, my justice porn, my impeachment porn is that we wait until March. We wait until we get to tax crap and Mueller stuff. Write up the articles of impeachment. We have Ukraine already done. Then we've got tax fraud. Then we've got emoluments, if you want to throw that in there. Then we've got obstruction on the Mueller stuff. And then you've got lying to Congress. Mm-hmm. That's an actual federal fucking crime. Mm-hmm. And that's what Bill Clinton was impeached for. And then abuse of power. We've got all these articles and a nice thing. Vote on them in March and then send it to the Senate. And the Senate acquits then. And then we use the fact that Republican senators acquitted a liar, a proven documentary proven liar. Mm-hmm. And then we use that to flip the Senate in 2020 as well. That's my dream come true scenario.
Yeah. I mean, it would take away their talking point if the facts come out. And like you said, it's enough to sway public opinion to the point where it's overwhelming. So they can't say anything anymore. Like, you know, Nadler, what about when you were saying you can't impeach when there's not an overwhelming amount of public support for it? That argument goes away. And then, like you said, you have to start criticizing the Republicans for still staying on the side of lies. But my fear is that their base already just has in their brain a defense for anything. So they could just be like, yeah, well, you know, everyone lies. It's politics. Everyone's dirty. Well, and then there you go. Poof. It's not a problem for them in their brain.
I totally get your pessimism this week. I really do. It's been, no, genuinely. I really do.
I know, I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, no. I really do. I understand where you're coming from. It's been enraging, you know. Mm-hmm. But I also think that, like, public opinion has been shifting. Mm-hmm. And, like, that Turley guy, for example, even though he's a jackass, he was saying, like, I believe there's been wrongdoing here. There just isn't enough evidence.
Yeah.
So even the guy that they brought out as the Republican.
And he didn't even really say there isn't enough evidence. He said, I want all the evidence.
Right, exactly.
And that is the only viable argument the Republicans have left, is that you're going too fast. You haven't. Now,
exactly.
There is enough evidence there to impeach him. But without following up with Mulvaney and Bolton and Kupperman and people who were in the room, then it seems, you know, but you're right, Jordan, if we get all that and we get all their testimony, like let's say the McGahn case decides in January and we get to hear their testimony in January, and who's to say they wouldn't continue to, you know, stonewall, then what does that even get you that you don't already have?
Right.
And it does it persuade, right, because all the Republicans will just say, but you didn't call Hunter Biden and you didn't call the whistleblower and you didn't call. There will always be someone we didn't call and they'll never be satisfied with it. But at least at that point, the only viable argument I think that they have for reasonable people is you really should get Mulvaney's testimony. You really should get Bolton's testimony just to wrap this up in a nice bow.
Yeah. Yeah. And then not to be. I totally accept.
Be it.
No, feel your feels.
I totally accept and cannot defend my blatant pessimism this week. But I will say that in this particular instance, I don't even know if it's necessarily a negative thing. Mm-hmm. Because back to the original question, if it really helps us for him to be removed in the Senate, ultimately, it might be a good thing that they won't change their mind and he won't be removed from the Senate. And then it will mobilize Democrats more to get him out for sure in the next election.
Yeah, that's absolutely the bomb diggity thing, right? Like, first of all, Senate acquits him. We're motivated against the Senate. Trump's still in office. We're voting against Trump. Yeah. That's the most motivated Democratic base you will ever see. And I honestly can't think of a downside of waiting or an upside of impeaching by Christmas. You know, it's urgent, it's urgent. But if you impeach now or you impeach in March, how do we stop cheating in 2020 by just, I mean, the information's already in the public. Mm-hmm. There's an actual impeachment of voting on the articles doesn't make it more public. It doesn't stop it. It doesn't do anything. It just is.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
I get it's urgent, but I haven't, you know, I don't know. It could go either way. Mm-hmm. I've heard from very good sources that they will wait. And I've heard from, but the mainstream media is like, nope, it's happening. It's happening. They're going to vote on articles of impeachment in the full House by December 20th. So we'll see soon. At least we'll know soon. At least it wasn't with the Mueller she wrote. podcast. We're like back in, you know, January of 2018. We're like, well,
how long is this thing going to go on?
I bet I don't, you know, he's wrapping up by Thanksgiving. He's wrapping up by Christmas. No, no, he's not. And we knew that, but we had no idea it was going to take to it. But 22 months was fast, but it was just very long and drawn out before we got anything. And then when we got it, it was spun by Bill Barr. It's just a mess. But I've also heard a couple things I want to clarify. I've heard that if we impeach him, he can't be pardoned. That's not true. If we impeach and remove him, he loses his pardon powers. But there's nothing in the Constitution says he can't be pardoned by whoever takes over for him if impeached, but not removed. If we impeach him this month, he will 100% not be removed unless we file all new articles and have a whole new impeachment next year. I've also heard that if he's impeached, he can't run again. That is also not true. An impeached president can run again. An impeached and removed president can run again unless the Senate adds a modifier saying he or she cannot hold any public trust, public office.
Wow.
In the future. Dude. And that has to be included in the Senate's decision if he's not to run again. Now, politically, it'd be real hard.
Right.
But there's nothing preventing that either. That's my understanding of the Constitution, at least. There is zero precedent for this. It's never even been an opportunity or a possibility in our history.
Yeah.
He would, though. He would run on a, like, I'm a victim. I'm going to come back stronger and better than ever. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Speaking of which, I heard him today pulling the whole, do Democrats really love our country? If they loved our country, they wouldn't be doing this. This is a serious question. And I was like, fuck you, dude.
Nixon did that, too. And I think Clinton did it. I mean, that's always just a thing.
Yeah. That's so dumb.
Just one of their dumb defenses that they're going to, it's just a political talking point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just bullshit.
That is really dumb that the Senate would ever pass any articles or ever convict a president and remove them and then not add that they can't run. Like who's going to change in 4 years? People don't change in a lifetime, dude.
Well, in 2010, they did that with a judge. Adam Schiff was the prosecutor and Turley was the defense. Turley lost. They impeached the judge 96-0 on one of the articles. And the Senate put in the thing, and you can never have public office of any kind or a judgeship ever again. Mm-hmm. Fuck your face. Like, they put
it
that in
there.
It seems
like that would go without saying. But
you would think.
Yeah, but I get why it doesn't, I guess.
It's mentioned in the Constitution that you must be impeached and removed from office or, you know, and you can't, you know, have a public office again. But it's separated grammatically, which makes it so that you would have to make that happen.
Yeah.
It's not default. You have to opt in for that option.
That would never be a thing in a regular workplace. Like, hey, sorry. No. Hey, you shit on my floor, so I'm firing you. But you can come back next year when you don't have a butthole.
That's it. We'll impeach Trump, remove his butthole, remove his stinker, and then he can come back and live in the White House like a good skunk.
Oh, God. Gross.
What a weird visual I just had in my head of a Trump skunk with his stinker removed. He was kind of rapey, Pepe Le Pew.
I was just going to say, he would if he had a pet in the White House, that was a skunk, it would definitely be
That is Pepe Le Pew's MO, right? Like, there's a black cat, accidental white paint stripe, rape.
Not to be a total social justice warrior or anything, but like when you watch like old cartoons like that, they do not understand consent.
Oh, dude, when you watch 10-year-old cartoons, they do not understand anything.
Yeah, yeah, consent.
Times have changed rapidly.
Pepe Le Pew.
Yeah.
Oh, that was like the anti-consent right there.
Yep. Not a good example.
Kids, if you're watching Pepe Le Pew. All right, we'll be right back with some Trump court filings today and a brief interview with our expert, Uncle Blazer. Stay with us. Hey everybody, it's AG. This helping of Daily Beans is brought to you by Zola. I will never forget the day that my husband asked me to marry him. He put a ring in a cake and I bit into it, didn't give an answer because I had to go to the dentist, an emergency dentist. But after some laughing gas, I said yes. And as stressful as that was, planning the wedding was even crazier. And I wish I knew about Zola. Zola makes wedding planning easy and less stressful with wedding websites, registry, invites, and a guest list manager all in one place, all right there. Zola has a free wedding website design with hundreds of gorgeous designs for every style. With Zola, it's easy to create your site in minutes and cool features like, let's see, online FAQ and an RSVP page, custom URL and password protection. So with the highest rated registry of all time, you can register for gifts, experiences, and honeymoon funds. Add gifts from other stores or sync existing registries to get all the benefits you and your guests want, like free shipping and returns, free and easy exchanges. You always exchange something. Price matching and group gifting. Shop your whole paper suite at Zola. From beautiful, affordable invites to save the dates and thank yous, all designed to match your wedding website. Customize with your own photos, wording, and more. They'll help you collect addresses and track online RSVPs with their free guest list manager. They'll even address your envelopes for free. Zola has helped 1 million couples get married, and they'll help you too. Sign up at zola.com/dailybeans and use promo code PAPER30 to get 30% off your invites and paper order. That's Zola, ZOLA.com/dailybeans, and use promo code PAPER30. You'll be glad you did. All right, everybody, welcome back. Before the break, we discussed the timeline on impeachment based on the outcome of 5 major cases that are currently moving their way through the courts. And in a related story, Trump had a deadline of noon today to appeal to the House Oversight Mazars case with the Supreme Court. He did file that at the last minute. And joining us today to discuss this filing and the ramifications and the stay filing in the Deutsche Bank case is Uncle Blazer. Welcome back.
Hello again, AG.
So good to talk to you. So Trump made it under the wire to file for an appeal with the Supreme Court in the House Oversight Mazars case. What does that mean for this case?
So he is requesting that the court take his case. He does not have the right to an appeal. He has to request that the Supreme Court take the case. So that's what this is. This is a petition for a writ of cert. So he's petitioning the court to take the case. And in doing so, he files a several hundred page document laying out why he thinks the court should take the case and in fact find in his favor. And the court will consider the request for cert at a conference. We don't necessarily know what conference the Supreme Court will consider this at. The House will respond to the request for cert. And I have not seen anything saying how long the House has to file its response. I would assume that they're going to do it as quickly as they possibly can. I'm sure they've already worked it up and they just need to address anything new that Trump threw into this draft that was just filed or document that was just filed. And they should get their paperwork in soon. And the next conference date is the 13th of December. So if all of the documents are on file with the court before then, the court should be able to take it up on the 13th, although they don't have to do it.
Now, I read that the House has 14 days to reply. I 100% see it that they'll do it as soon as possible. But does Trump have a chance to respond to that reply, or is it just one reply apiece?
Yeah, he gets the final say. So he'll in the other Mazars case, the Manhattan DA Mazars case, the cert filing was on a very tight schedule with I think maybe 7 days for a response and then 2 days for Trump's final cert reply. I have not seen a schedule for this. 14 days might just be the default number of days that you have under the Supreme Court's rules. And if they didn't lay out a different number of days, then that might be the number of days that they have. But I would assume that the House is going to want to get their filing in as soon as possible to hopefully get this considered at the conference on the 13th.
Yeah, because my understanding is that House has 14 days. They won't use that all. But then Trump has 30 for a sir reply, unless, of course, the court says, puts together a faster schedule for that.
Yeah, that could be the case. When they issued the order requiring Trump to file for cert by the 5th, they did not say anything in that order about the days, which I guess means it just defaults to the regular Supreme Court schedule for how long you have to file. And if you say that's 14 followed by 30, I believe it, although that sounds like a long time, but I have not looked at those rules recently, so I don't know the answer off the top of my head.
Yeah, and in either case, they could probably require it faster, and it definitely puts it under the wire for the January 10th conference. So we're still looking at a super fast-tracked case.
Agreed.
And then, of course, in addition, the president's lawyers have said they will file an emergency request today asking the court to temporarily stop Deutsche Bank and Capital One from handing over Trump's business and family financial records to the House. So tell us about that emergency request.
So on Monday, the Second Circuit Court of Appeals issued its ruling in the Deutsche Bank case and required that Trump seek a stay from the Supreme Court within 7 days. And when I originally read that, I read that to mean that Trump had to file within 7 days. But I went back and looked at it again. And really, if Trump doesn't actually receive a stay within 7 days, then by my reading of the court's order, Deutsche Bank needs to turn over the documents. So rather than waiting until the 10th to file, it looks like Trump and his team have figured out they need to file sooner than that and hope to actually have the stay in place from the court by the 10th in order to stop Deutsche Bank from handing over the documents. So that I saw an article today saying what you just read, that the Trump's legal team has said they're going to be filing their stay request today, and that makes sense. That would land at the Supreme Court, and they would have to issue an administrative stay that gets the case beyond the December 10th deadline, or else Deutsche Bank is going to have to comply with the subpoena.
And you and I had talked offline a little bit about each circuit court having a Supreme Court justice assigned to it. And that's the person that, I guess, makes these administrative stay determinations like they did in the Beryl Howell case. Or was it the McGahn case? I'm losing track. But which justice is it that's assigned to the Second Circuit in this case? And why does that matter?
Well, stepping back, we'll remember in the House Mazars case, there was an administrative stay issued by Justice Roberts, the Chief Justice of the court, back a few weeks ago, and kind of the whole world freaked out and said, oh my God, the Supreme Court has granted his stay request. They ultimately did end up granting that stay request, but that administrative stay was put in place by the D.C. Circuit Justice, who happens to be the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, John Roberts. He's the D.C. Circuit Justice, and so he issued the administrative stay that stayed it just long enough to allow the issue to be before the full court at a conference date, and then the full court decided whether to grant an actual stay to allow Trump to file his writ of cert, which has just now happened in the Mazars case. So now we're going through that same process in the Deutsche Bank case, and the circuit justice for the Second Circuit is Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So Ginsburg will be receiving this request for an administrative stay and will be the one to decide whether to grant it or not, to allow it to be deferred and heard at the next conference date of the court, for the court to then do what they did in Mazars, decide whether or not to grant a stay in order for Trump to file for cert.
And before everyone gets really excited, do you really think that Ruth Bader Ginsburg would not issue an administrative stay in this case?
I find that very hard to believe. I mean, that would be undercutting the rest of the court. I don't think she would do that. I would say that if she does that, she must think that that the full court would for some reason find in Trump's favor. And so if she really wanted to derail the process, she could throw that monkey wrench and allow the Deutsche Bank subpoena to go through. She doesn't seem like the type of judge who would do that. But, you know, whatever RBG does is good with me. So I fully anticipate that she will grant this administrative stay, though.
Well, we will know for sure by December 10th.
We will. And I think if this stay request, if this administrative stay is put in place to allow the full stay to be considered at the conference on December 13th, you could conceivably have all three of the big Supreme Court cases, the Manhattan DA Mazars case, the House Mazars case, and the House Deutsche Bank case, all before the court on December 13th. And if they're inclined to deny cert in the Mazars case, I would think they would also deny the stay request in the Deutsche Bank case, because at that point they would have decided that they're not buying Trump's arguments in the Mazars case, which are virtually identical to his arguments in the Deutsche Bank case. So it's possible you could have a denial of cert and a denial of the stay request in the Deutsche Bank case both happen on December 13th. Now, I'm of a mind that the court is going to consider all three of these cases on their merits But it's entirely possible that if the court thinks these cases have no merit, they could all be decided on the 13th. We would presumably hear that result on the following Monday morning, December 16th, and all three of these cases could conceivably be resolved against Trump on the 16th, on the 13th, and we find out about it on the 16th.
Yeah, and we would be remiss if we didn't mention that the conference dates of December 13th and January 10th are the suggested conference dates. The Supreme Court could decide, you know what, we need another week to think about all three of these cases and give themselves until December 19th or something like December 17th, something like that.
Exactly right. They have a lot of power to do what they want on their own schedule. They don't have to follow these scheduled conference dates, and they don't always do it.
All right. Well, wonderful. Well, thank you so much for giving us this quick update. We really appreciate it. And we hope to see you this weekend for Mueller, She Wrote, so we can get a full on update on everything that's going on in these cases.
All right. If you invite me, I'll be there.
All right. Thanks so much. And we really appreciate you taking the time and talking to us here on our little podcasts.
My pleasure.
All right. Thanks to Uncle Blazer. That guy's so rad. In other court news, Trump has confirmed another unqualified judge.
Yes, he has.
Trump didn't confirm. He nominated.
Right. You, right.
You'll tell us.
He's going to take all the credit for it, which is really, in a sense, all that matters. The name of the judge is Sarah Pitlick.
I love this.
Yeah.
Pitlick.
Yeah. Sounds like a really inefficient way to get sweat out of your underarms.
I know some dudes that are into that.
But yeah, the Senate confirmed her by a party line vote Tuesday, with the exception of one person. That was Susan Collins. She voted against her.
She's in so much trouble. She's probably going to stop
saying that she's not running. Yeah.
Oh, is she not running?
No, I was going to say I thought you were going to say she's probably going to say she's not running.
Oh, no. She's just probably going to make every decision. She's probably going to start caucusing with the Democrats between now and election if she still runs.
Susan Collins?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Sarah Pitlick, she's considered unfit for a couple of reasons and by multiple groups of people. One is
unfit Pitlick.
Yes. One is her just straight up inexperience in courtrooms, like lack of time in them. And then the other is her just egregious records on women's rights. She is very staunchly, not only is she anti-abortion, she's anti-surrogacy and anti-IVF.
Yeah, she's not even for in vitro.
How fucking weird is that?
Mm-hmm.
That is,
she looks young too. It's odd. I mean, not that really matters, but like.
But isn't creating life pro-life?
Maybe she thinks it's more like you're playing God and leave that to God.
Right. I'm sure that's their justification for that. But it's just so antithetical to all of their main arguments.
Family values thing, right? Like, yes. If you're a family and the only way you can have a family is through in vitro fertilization.
Yeah.
You'd think that a family values, you know, we have to breed more people into our cult would be for.
Right.
For IVF.
Well, fucking Jesus was made by a miracle zap. So there's a
miracle zap.
Yeah. So there's alternative ways that they definitely
Jordan
embrace.
Calls the Immaculate Conception the miracle zap. We're scrubbing bubbles.
I have to say this in all seriousness.
Yes.
My level of knowledge about the Bible is so fucking lacking in comparison to.
I just study in college. That's the only reason I even know vaguely what.
When I didn't grow up very religious, and then I realized I was queer at a really young age, so I didn't take a whole lot of interest in the old Bible. Mm-hmm. But now as an adult, I'm like, I need to go and read that shit and learn a little more because I don't.
I'll get you
I
a Wonder Bible for
don't
Christmas.
Get a lot of
the kids one.
Yeah, get you the kids Wonder Bible. Yeah,
my parents made me read from that shit. And they're not even religious.
Of course, in the Kids Wonder Bible, they probably don't call it Immaculate Conception either. It's probably the Miracle Zap.
Yeah.
They should have a comic book Bible. Kapow!
I went to a
You're pregnant.
My mom sent us to this low-income church camp when I was a kid because they were paying for the church was paying for it. And we got there.
It's a good time to have heard.
Yeah, my sisters and I were like, we don't own any Bibles. And they hauled us into the office of the church camp. And we're like, we have some for your family. Here you go.
That's nice.
But I got there and I was like, is this a church camp?
When someone asks you if you're a god, you say yes.
<I know. laughs>
If you're a church camp and someone asks you if you have a Bible, you say yes.
My mom was like, oh, I'm fucking get rid of my kids for a couple of weeks and then I'm off to this church camp. And I get there and I was like, we don't even own a Bible. And they were like, oh shit, why are you here?
We don't even own a Bible.
Oh, that is so funny.
But I don't feel bad because they were Salvation Army, and Salvation Army hates gay people.
Anti-LGBTQ. Right. Remember that when you see the Salvation Army red bucket people.
Yeah. Ugh. So it's a fun little story about my childhood for you. Sorry, Jordan.
Yeah,
go ahead.
That's funny. No, that's funny. All the Christian camps seemed so fun. Young Life was a really big thing for. Have you heard of that? Young Life.
No.
It's like a fraternity for Jesus.
No,
basically.
But I can imagine their theme song.
Yeah. What is it?
New. Young Life. Gonna hang out in canoes.
Basically, they looked like they had the best time. They went on these trips to Catalina Island and shit, and they like fucking making out.
Tell you what, band camp was real, and science camp.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Those all sound, camps are just great.
Anyhow, I'm so sorry. Miracle Zap.
Yes.
So she's against Miracle Zap.
Yeah, she's against Miracle Zap. She's against abortion, surrogacy, and IVF. Fucking crazy. But she's going to be a judge. She's going to be a federal judge in the U.S. District Court in St. Louis.
She's never even tried a case.
Right. She has.
It's just nuts.
She has hardly any courtroom experience. And she's also a member of the Federalist Society. Yeah, exactly.
Where do they get that? Don't they even have anyone who graduated that maybe tried a case and isn't batshit insane? It doesn't seem like it because they have that Menashe guy who thinks that, you know, culturally everyone has to be a man and white in order for shit to go forward. And just like the nutsoest bullshit, and they've never tried a case. How do you... Never mind.
Yeah, it's fucking crazy.
It's just this whole, it's a McConnell thing. They've been doing it since forever, since The Family, if you've ever seen that. Their whole goal is to just pack the courts. They just recently flipped the Second Circuit, which is New York, Connecticut, Vermont, I think, to have a majority of conservative judges. Now, granted, only five of them are four or five of them are Trump judges, but because there's a lot of GW and Bush judges on there too, and they, you know, they're cool. They've been ruling properly.
I really hope the Democrats start like doing that more, just single issue kind of thing in Congress.
Yeah. Well, obviously, what I wanted to do is to get up there and amend, get in the White House, take the Senate, take the friggin' house, keep the house, and just start expanding the courts. We're going to go from 11 to 15 judges, and in the Supreme Court, we're going to go bigger. We're going to have 13 judges, and then just a point, and get everybody in there, and then just be like,
totally.
And you can't expand the courts. We just fucking did.
Yep.
Although I think in order to do that, you might need a 2/3 vote in the Senate. I'll have to look it up, but which we can't mathematically get this time around.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for that disappointing news.
Yeah, Pitlick.
We'll be right back with an ethics probe into Attorney General Bill Barr, and Matthew fucking Whitaker is back in the news. Stay with us. Hey, everybody, it's AG. This order of Daily Beans is brought to you by the good people at Upstart. My Uncle Mac, or as we call him, Blackjack Mac, would be the first to tell you it can be hard to get out of debt when your credit score is less than awesome. Sorry, Uncle Mac. But thankfully, now there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that knows you're more than just your credit score. They offer smarter interest rates to help you pay off higher interest credit card debts. Upstart goes beyond the traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness, which I love. And they actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smart interest rate. Upstart makes the process super fast and super easy. You can check your rate in just a few minutes. It won't hit your credit. Doesn't affect your credit. And once you're approved, most people get their funds the very next day. Over 300,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards or meet their financial goals. I know Uncle Blackjack Mac could use help with his, he calls them student loans. you can free yourself from the burden of high interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. So see why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/dailybeans to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes and it will not affect your credit. That's upstart.com/dailybeans. You'll be glad you did. All right, everybody, welcome back. We have a new investigation into Bill Barr. What's happening?
Yeah, two U.S. senators are calling for an ethics investigation into Bill Barr. The two are Ron Wyden of Oregon and Patrick Leahy of Vermont. And even though there's a number of things we could conceivably think Barr should be investigated for, the reason that these senators are citing is Barr's decision to approve an illegal mass surveillance program that was conducted by the DEA. And it's a program that started in 1992, so it's like an old-ass thing. Started in 92, spanned 20 years. They collected billions and billions of phone records, not billions and billions, just billions. Well, I mean, I guess billions and billions is the same as saying billions, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah. Billions and billions of documents.
You could say billions like 10 times. It's still just billions.
Exactly. Wow. That's funny. Okay. So collected billions and billions of phone records and documents, and they obtained those records through subpoenas that were never reviewed by a judge even. So,
but
that's
isn't
the
he
crux
like
of this.
All mad about surveillance on Carter Page, for example?
Yes, selective surveillance morality there. The letter reads, quote, "Mr. Barr's authorization of this sweeping surveillance program without requiring, at minimum, an appropriate legal analysis was not consistent with his oath to support and defend the Constitution, and it likely amounted to professional misconduct. Attorney General Barr knew, or should have known, that neither statutory law nor federal case law permitted the DEA to sweep up in bulk billions of records of Americans' telephone communications. We write to ask that you open an investigation into the authorization of this recently disclosed illegal bulk surveillance program that collected billions of records of Americans' telephone calls without conducting any legal analysis of the program."
Yeah, normally, and you'll remember this if you listened to us do the book review on, I think it was Comey, A Higher Loyalty, when he talked about the Stellar Wind program, which was the CIA questionable interrogation techniques. And you have to have, like in that, you had to have the Office of Legal Counsel or the White House counsel write up, draft a memo saying this is legal. Mm-hmm. Just like when Trump, after he withheld the aid for Ukraine, had to go to the legal counsel, Office of Legal Counsel at Office of Management and Budget, and get them to write something up that says it was legal.
Yeah.
And two people resigned. This is the same kind of situation. And he never actually, I guess, even requested analysis of the legality of this sort of massive like scoop up of our private stuff.
Yeah.
And this all, 1992, it began. This, I'm assuming, is on the heels of Nancy Reagan's Just Say No campaign, which then morphed into the War on Drugs, which drugs won, by the way. They won. They won that.
Very much so.
High five, drugs. And so that's kind of, I think, that's just amazing that it's coming up now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, they did say that it was recently disclosed. So I guess it's just one of those things that, you know, you just got swept under the rug over time.
I know. You know what I bet it is? Is that you remember when the Senate requested all of the documents
Kavanaugh's?
From Barr and Kavanaugh all the way back to the day? And they were like, no, you can have these and you can't have those. And then they were just sort of slow rolling them. Maybe they got that in that.
Oh, yeah.
They've been reviewing them as they've come in and then they found this thing and have decided to do an ethics investigation.
Yeah, because I know I dreaded him with Kavanaugh because it was reminiscent to me of one of the questions he was getting asked to answer for his conduct that was from forever ago.
Right. Those emails that were stolen in appointing judges.
Oh, yeah. That's what it was.
And he was like, I didn't know they were stolen.
Yes. I was going to say DNC. LOL. All over again. The same thing happens.
Right.
But yes, that's what it was. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. I don't know.
It's interesting.
It is. So I guess if it's an ethics investigation, does that mean I didn't find this out? I should have. Sorry. What committee? Is that a committee investigation then?
There is, I think, an ethics committee. There might be a specific ethics committee for the Department of Justice. There's like a group of ethics professionals within the Department of Justice that might be conducting it. I don't know who they filed it with, but
it was with the DOJ.
Then it's, yeah, the DOJ ethics office. And then they would do that sort of. It's like the inspector general, but an ethics group.
Got it.
And so then what would happen is if they found anything criminal, they would make a criminal referral to the Department of Justice, which is weird.
Right.
And then they would report back to if Senate is asking this ethics department to do the investigation, they would presumably report back to the Senate. Now, of course, this ethics department is within the Department of Justice. So interesting.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Right. Probably not a lot.
Yeah. He's really good at burying stuff, isn't he?
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And a judge has ordered the release of Matthew fucking Whitaker's financial documents. A federal judge has rejected the Department of Justice's request to keep Big Dick Toilet Wine's financial disclosures from forms a secret. They wanted to keep these financial forms a secret. This comes from another FOIA lawsuit filed by BuzzFeed.
Nice.
High five, BuzzFeed. The judge, Trevor McFadden, ruled Wednesday that Hot Tub Crime Machine's draft financial disclosures forms are ineligible for protection under an exemption protecting the confidentiality of policymaking debates. Quote, The court is unpersuaded by your bullshit deliberative process argument.
I pulled a shift just then, did you?
I'm paraphrasing. Whitaker's draft forms do not bear the mark of the deliberative process. Because BuzzFeed isn't looking for emails and communications, they're just looking for the forms. So there's no deliberative process that they're protected under. It's just the forms. The judge did allow the Justice Department to delete any info that didn't make it to the final report, but any omissions will be evident from the drafts, and any inaccurate, there's seven drafts of his financial disclosure, and any inaccurate or incomplete details that were later changed will be left in the new version, according to Josh Gerstein at Politico. Whitaker was required to submit financial disclosure forms soon after he became Jeff Sessions' chief of staff, but due to an administrative error, his disclosure was not processed by the justice ethics officials until a year later. That's after Whitaker was named by Trump as the acting attorney general after he canned Sessions. So that's a failure of the ethics officials. It might have never made it to the Justice Department ethics office. And if it did and they sat on it on purpose, I question their ability to investigate what you were just talking about, the mass surveillance program. Mm-hmm. And if it did make it and they had that actual administrative error, like they didn't know it was there, again, incompetence. I just don't see, it's not a good look either way.
No, it is not.
All right, it's time to play. Where in the world is Rudy Giuliani? All right, Thursday we learned that Giuliani is in Kyiv now. Yesterday you reported he was in Budapest. He's in Kyiv now with his entourage of conspiracy theorists during a surprise visit today, much to the chagrin of Zelensky's office. Everyone's like, what the shit? God. Somebody was like, oh shit, what's he doing here? Somebody posted that. An official said Zelensky was caught off guard by Giuliani's arrival, only learning about it from the media, and says there are zero official meetings with him on the books, everyone, just so you know. Giuliani flew from Budapest to Kyiv Wednesday on the low-cost airline Wizz Air.
Everyone's having a field day with that on Twitter.
No. Wizz Air.
I haven't even flown Wizz Air. When I was living in Europe, I thought about flying Wizz Air a few times, but the reviews were so horrific.
You've heard of Wizz Air?
Yeah, I have. And I've considered flying it before because I've flown like Ryanair and other budget airlines in Europe. But
Ryan?
Yeah, there's an airline that's really popular.
Ryanair.
Yeah, yeah.
Some guy named Ryan's all, I could beat Wiz.
Bob Air. Based on like a last name, it's like an Irish airline.
Thank me for flying me airlines.
Right. No, but I read reviews of it and thought, I'm not fucking flying Wizz Air. That looks shitty. I'm not flying Wizz Air. Fact that Rudy Giuliani did and I wouldn't even do it. It's pretty funny. Sorry,
that's
go
funny.
Ahead.
No, it's okay. I'm sorry. I was just going to say, Wizz Air sounds like something like a white parent says to try to sound cool.
Yeah.
Wizz Air.
Never gonna happen.
What's up, Wizz Air?
Stop trying to make Wizz Air happen. Gretchen Wieners.
That's funny.
Wizz Air. It's like our spirit airlines. Is
yes.
What that is,
or right? like a name for a pair of sneakers or something.
Yeah,
like
totally.
Wizz Air.
Yeah, like you wanted Jordans and you got Wizz Airs instead. Yeah. And you're like, damn it.
That's what Kushner wears when he's doing Wall Warlock stuff. Wizz Airs.
Wall Warlock Wizz Airs.
They like light up, they have the LEDs on them.
That's a title you get if you can climb the wall. So anyway, he was there. He was he was there, I think he was in Budapest with Lutsenko and the host of that documentary on OANN. I can't remember her name, stupid.
Yeah.
He's expected to meet with Shokin and Kulik while he's in Kyiv. And he also met with a guy named Derkach, a shady Ukrainian lawmaker who was once a member of Yanukovych's Party of Regions. Derkach, who graduated from an academy run by the KGB, posted pics on Facebook of the two of them meeting at an undisclosed location. Derkach says he has proof Burisma had paid Biden himself for lobbying and said he told Giuliani about sending letters soliciting support from Lindsey Graham, Devin Nunes, and Mick Mulvaney. We will keep you posted as the story develops, but that is where Rudy Giuliani is. Thanks for playing.
All right.
We'll be right back with a story about a cutback on SNAP and some schadenfreude to make you feel better after that terrible story. So stick around. Hey everybody, it's AG. To me, the best part of the holidays is reconnecting with family and sharing stories and reliving moments together. But preserving these memories can be difficult and cumbersome. That's why I decided to give my mom the most meaningful gift last year. I got her Storyworth. Storyworth is an online service that helps your loved ones tell the story of their lives through thought-provoking questions about their memories and personal experiences. Every week, Storyworth emails your family member a different story prompt like, What have been some of your life's greatest surprises, or what's one of the riskiest things you've ever done? And after 1 year, StoryWorth will compile every answered question and photo you choose to include into a beautiful keepsake book that is shipped for free. And that's where I'm at this year. So I signed my mom up last year, and now I'm going to get the book. I love that. It's just such a great gift. My favorite is that StoryWorth comes up with unique questions I would have never thought to ask, and they make it fun and easy to connect with family in a meaningful way. You never know what family history StoryWorth will uncover. Preserve and pass on memories with StoryWorth, the most meaningful gift for your family. Sign up today by going to StoryWorth.com/dailybeans. You'll get $20 off your first purchase. That's StoryWorth.com/dailybeans for $20 off. You'll be glad you did. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. We have a story now that makes me really mad. Jordan?
Yeah. So Trump's planning to institute a pretty drastic change to the SNAP program. SNAP stands for Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. So food stamps, basically. Essentially, they're instituting a work requirement that will cause what's currently being estimated as 700,000 Americans losing SNAP coverage, which is awful, and a huge assault on the working class, on underserved communities, on anybody that's trying to get on their feet again, basically. It's a USDA rule change. It's going into effect April 1st, and it specifically relates to the demographic of people between the ages of 18 and 49 who don't have children and are not disabled. So that's the specific demographic. Currently, that demographic is required to work at least 20 hours a week for more than 3 months over a 3-year period to qualify for SNAP. But a lot of states have been able to issue waivers for areas that have super high unemployment numbers. But this change is basically going to limit states' ability to do that. And the only states that are going to, or areas that are going to be allowed to do that, are ones that have an unemployment rate of 6% or higher. Everybody else is going to have to just get off food stamps.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's really, the national unemployment rate in October was 3.6%. So they're setting 6% as that threshold for saying that that's just too much of a difference, apparently.
And that everyone in that city apparently must be doing well if their unemployment rate is low.
Right, basically. Yeah, just punishing people living in a certain reality in a state that doesn't have as bad of an unemployment rate. But mostly punishing, and like 700,000 I've heard is a conservative estimate. There's estimates that are in the upwards of millions of people that are going to lose that. And
so they decide by the state unemployment rate?
It said areas. So
areas.
Whatever. Yeah, let me see. The new rule would limit states from waiving those standards, instead restricting their use to those areas that have a 6% unemployment rate or higher. So that makes me feel like it's like a district sort of thing.
Okay, because I was going to say California is, I think, like a 4%. Yeah, 4%. Unemployment rate. So
yeah.
If he was doing it by state, you know, it would just disqualify the entire state. But it sounds like the state gets to determine the, I have to look.
Yeah,
that's,
well,
a weird thing.
I maybe it's just by city or like county or something, or
district, or I mean, there's a million ways you could do it.
Split it up.
Also, these economists' calculations of what the unemployment rate is or what the economy looks like is frustrating, considering we live in a time of gig economy and no job security and people working multiple jobs.
It's, yeah.
Even if there are jobs available, they're not secure. And yeah, that's what Purdue has been saying. You know, the economy is booming. And so this is going to save us a lot of money. And, you know, this is designed for people to be more self-sufficient. But the way that these conservative economists calculate this stuff is not based on human rights or living standards or like what people actually deserve.
Yeah.
It's based on bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, it just occurred to me, this could actually be punishment for fair district maps.
Yeah.
Because if you think about like when Democrats win gerrymandering cases and they get nonpartisan districts drawn up, which give a good even amount of all sorts of different demographics and class striations, et cetera. Because you used to be like, if the Republicans draw the lines, it's all super rich white people. And then if you make it more diverse and you bring in more disenfranchised people, you lower your unemployment rate, you could lose your food stamps for that area. It might be an incentive against fair districting.
God. Yeah, that's shitty to think about.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of facets of this that are,
because poor people tend to vote Democrat.
Up. Yeah, of course. Yeah, and I know too, they are using language saying that this is also to be fair to the American taxpayer, so they don't feel like their money is just going to people that aren't trying to get work, and it's just so
like all the money that we paid that went to rich people this time around,
right? Well, and it's like, yes, because humans love living in squalor. That's something they strive for. They strive to not provide the childhood they wish they could provide to their kids.
People love it when their kids are hunger challenged, or
right? Yeah, it's just, not to mention the fact that 20 hours, correct me if I'm wrong, please, because I totally could be, but aren't there certain like labor laws that make it so you have to start providing certain benefits once a person works like a certain amount of hours?
Yeah, usually.
So like a lot of jobs are disincentivized for even allowing someone to work a certain amount of hours when it's like a part-time job situation.
Yeah, and they already do that based on that.
Yeah,
right. And so now you have an additional incentive, decentivization. Decentivized to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this is going to hurt a lot of people. And there's a quote here from Stacey Dean, who is the vice president of food assistance policy for the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. That's a mouthful. She said this change really weakens SNAP's ability to assist the unemployed during economic downturn. So it's going to make it harder in future for then states to get those waivers if things are, you know, if there's an economic downturn in their state.
Mm-hmm. And there have been a lot of indicators that we could be headed for an economic downturn. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, it's really sad. I know that there's a lot of local food pantries, too, and stuff that I'm sure will continue to thrive and hopefully will get even more support as this gets instituted. But it's just going to put such a huge burden on not only the individual, but also the communities around them that might be, you know, I mean, every single facet of their community, everyone that's struggling, everyone that's maybe not struggling themselves, but devotes resources in their life to helping their community. It's just...
And Trump fucked charities, too, by making the donation tax write-off less. So by stifling that. So because charities have been in trouble since that tax bill passed already. Mm-hmm. And so just give a little extra, especially this holiday season. I know we do a neighborhood blankie drive. You just go around and pick up people's blankets, and then we just go down to the village, East Village, and hand them out. Keep some extra blankets and jackets in your car and food, and there's a lot of food banks around you can volunteer at.
Also, quick, tiny little tangent here. Speaking of food stamps, I've been learning a lot about food deserts recently, and like what a lot of low-income people face who use food stamps. There's in their neighborhoods and in their areas and a lot of cities across the country, they don't have access to grocery stores that accept food stamps, or they're like a 90-minute bus ride away or something. And so that's like a really huge challenge. And so I've been learning a lot about the importance of supporting farmers markets and food growing or urban food initiatives in more low-income. Yeah, in low-income areas of
that
your city.
That accept SNAP.
Yeah, yeah. And donating some money or at least supporting them in some way, because that's going to be really crucial for a lot of people who are...
And now they'll have to consider, what area am I in, and is it under a 6% unemployment rate or above a 6% unemployment rate?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then it's like, if people can't even depend on getting the sustenance that they need nutritionally to continue on, honestly, because it's as cut and dry as that is, you fucking need food.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to have to now put money on credit or something to like go and move to an area that has an unemployment rate that can accommodate their needs? It's like the whole thing just creates so many problems. That
we could actually have food refugees.
Yeah, right. That's fucking terrifying. Food refugees because they're in an area that is supposedly doing better.
Where arbitrary number is chosen.
Yeah.
Well,
it's really, really, really shitty.
Sufficiently pissed me off. So, to counteract that, it's time for some Schadenfreude.
Schadenfreude!
All right, Nancy Pelosi clapped back after her announcement that the House will start drafting impeachment articles when a reporter asked her if she hated Trump. Before we get to the clip, do you guys see this today?
Mm-hmm.
I want you to know who the reporter was that she was yelling at. Yelling is a strong term that she was clapping back at. Put in his place. His name is James Rosen, and in January 2018, he was ousted from his job at the Fox News chief Washington correspondent position after 18 years for an established pattern of flirting aggressively with peers and making unwanted sexual advances toward three female Fox News journalists. For Ailes and Murdoch to fire you for sexual stuff, that's not good. He was also investigated by the Justice Department as a co-conspirator to espionage. You can find that in the Washington Post. He now works for Sinclair. So I want you to hear this clip of him asking Pelosi if she hates Trump. It's a little hard to hear in the beginning, but she ends up getting on the mic. So let's listen to the clip.
Do you hate the president, Madam Speaker? Because
I don't hate anybody. Not anybody in the world. So don't accuse me.
I did not accuse you. I asked a question. Representative Collins yesterday suggested that the Democrats are doing this simply because they don't like the guy.
I have nothing to do with it. Let me just say this.
I think it's an important
point. I think the president is a coward when it comes to helping our kids who are afraid of gun violence. I think he is cruel when he doesn't deal with helping our dreamers. Of which we're very proud. I think he's in denial about the climate crisis. However, that's about the election. This is about the election. Take it up in the election. This is about the Constitution of the United States and the facts that lead to the president's violation of his oath of office. And as a Catholic, I resent your using the word hate in a sentence that addresses me. I don't hate anyone. I was raised in a way that is full, a heart full of love, and always prayed for the president. And I still pray for the president. I pray for the president all the time. So don't mess with me when it comes to words like that.
All right, so happy Schadenfreude to you all. I hope that lifted your spirits a little bit. Any final thoughts?
No, not really.
No, none from you.
Oh, actually, yes. I've been meaning to say thank you to the person who sent us these really cool coasters.
Yes, I was going to mention that on next Molly Show, but since you are holding
perfect.
It right now. Yes, from Tamara Beecham.
Yay!
Yeah, we'll share a picture of them on social media.
They're really pretty and really well done.
We got these really sweet, handmade, ceramic Molly She Wrote coasters.
Yeah.
And we love getting cool shit from our fans.
Yeah, they're very pretty. I'm using it right now. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, if you want to send us any cool shit, or just a thank you note, or just a fuck you note, whatever the note is.
Our address is on our website.
Yeah, address is on the website mullershewrote.com or thedailybeans.com.
Dailybeanspod.
Dailybeanspod.com. I can never get it right.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I don't have any other final thoughts other than just thank you all so much. And it's the news is crazy and I know it. And if you need to take a break, take a break. We'll be here when you get back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so please take care of yourselves, take care of each other, take care of your mental health, and take care of the planet. I've been AG.
I've been Jordan Coburn.
I've been Amanda Reeder.
And them's the Beans. The Daily Beans is executive produced and directed by AG and Jordan Coburn, and engineered and edited by Mackenzie Mazzell and Starburns Industries. Our marketing manager, executive assistant, production and social media direction is Amanda Reeder. Fact-checking and research by AG, Jordan Coburn, and Amanda Reeder. Our music is written and performed by They Might Be Giants. Our web design and branding are by Joelle Reeder with Moxie Design Studios. And our website is dailybeanspod.com.
You voted.
I did.
You protested.
Again.
You postcarded.
So many Sundays.
You posted on social media.
Got some likes.
And you're still reeling from all the terrible news.
Yeah, but what else can I do?
I'm Kelly.
I'm Lila.
And we're going to help you figure that out.
Each week, we'll interview people on the front lines of political action about the things they actually did to take action.
What got them started, who helped them along the way, and what they'd do differently if they had it to do all over again.
And in the process, we'll give you concrete advice about how to take the leap from freaking out on Twitter to making a difference.
Follow What Can I Do wherever you listen to podcasts or tune in on whatcanidopodcast.com.
Hi, I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.